I'd like to share an idea that I prepared last year with my good friend, Rabbi Ariel Rakovsky in Dallas, Texas. The resume is the first foot in the door of any prospective employer. Most applicants don't even make it past the first critical stage in the interview process. Hence the age-old problem, how do you get noticed and leave a lasting impression? Around a year ago, Jeff Scardino, a senior creative at Ogilvy and Mather, and professor at Miami Ad School, decided to have a fresh look at the classic dilemma facing all job seekers. He put together what he dubbed the relevant resume, a resume littered with an extensive list of failures and unflattering references and non-skills. Instead of the usual hyperbole and ego-touting, Scardino believed that a genuine expression of one's flaws and an honest portrayal of an applicant as someone who is imperfect but honest and striving to improve would go a much further distance. Indeed, his experiment paid off in spades, and his relevant resume stood out amongst the stack. And so he put the theory to work, and the results were stunning. Quoting from an article I saw on the subject, he wrote, "The regular resume received one response and zero meeting requests, while the relevant resume received 8 responses and 5 meeting requests. One company even replied, 'First off, I applaud you. I never received a resume like yours. I see hundreds of resumes a year, so it was refreshing to see someone take a different approach. I've been passing it around the office, and everyone is dying to meet you.'" More recently, the authorship of similar types of relevant resumes has become quite popular, and though counterintuitive, they have been received in a most favorable light. What may we learn from this phenomenon? Towards the end of the parsha, we read about Makalel, a man who curses against God, the most heinous of crimes, and after some delay and some uncertainty on behalf of Moshe Rabbeinu, he's ultimately taken from his prison, and the man is stoned to death, al pi devar Hashem, on God's order. The story seems to come out of nowhere. Who is this man? Why is he so upset at HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Why does he need to curse God? Now, this is a big deal. It's a big deal particularly because his punishment is so utterly devastating. We would thus expect an explanation for the man's behavior, as well as some background, some biographical sketch, some information about who he was, what was bothering him, what was irking him. Yet strangely, the Torah is silent. It provides us with mere clues, and that's it, as to his true identity. There's little to nothing about the particular grievance that he had. And if this were a modern-day workplace incident, we'd have social worker visits, we'd talk to him about his anger issues, we'd try to find out, why is this man so upset? One of the many possibilities suggested by the Mefarshim is that this man, the Makalel, was responding to the laws stipulated in the Torah regarding the lechem ha'panim, the showbread, which sits on the table, the shulchan, in the tabernacle. Lagleg ve'amar b'yom ha'shabbos yarchenu derech ha'melech lechol pas chama b'chol yom. He couldn't understand a king should eat bread that is warm and freshly baked every day. A president gets new bread every day. He doesn't eat bread that was stale, that was sitting for up to 7 days. Cold bread. And he couldn't understand why we would only change such the bread for HaKadosh Baruch Hu only once a week. What sort of way, he wondered, is that to treat the king of all kings? And this is a difficult backstory to understand on two levels. That's what so upset him. First of all, who gets so outraged over details like this? Why does the routine of a lechem apanim disgust him so deeply? But second of all, and more fundamentally, Chazal say he was upset about the lechem apanim. What a terrible way to treat God. Now, the guy has a point. I suppose it is a slight to the Rivon Sholom's kavod. But in light of those strong feelings, it's the Makalel's next move that is most perplexing. For he goes and he curses against HaKadosh Baruch Hu. How does the pendulum swing so drastically, so widely? He was once the fiercest defender of kavod Shemayim, of the glory of God's name. And a minute later, he reveals himself to be the most egregious violator of the name of God. As is often the case by the sins of individuals throughout the Torah, whenever there's a vague description of the crime and background, Chazal step in to offer us numerous approaches and understandings. And in addition to the backstory of the Makalel as provided by Chazal, As someone who was irritated over the showbread and its seemingly disrespectful treatment of the Ribono Shel Olam, Rashi cites the Midrashim and divulges further information from his biographical background. Rashi says, Vayatza ben Isha Yisrael, Mehechan Yatza, where'd he come from? Rabbi Levi Omer me'olamo Yatza, from his own world. Rabbi Brachia Omer me'parsha shel Mali Yatza, Masnisa Amra mi'beiz dino shel Moshe Yatza. Mechuyev. He came out of the court of Moshe Rabbeinu, and he was judged as obligated, as chayav, as guilty, as obligated for something he had done. So Rabbi Levi says he came from his own world. He was an outsider. He was someone with a different perspective, a different worldview. Rabbi Brachia says he was fueled by an understanding of the Lechem Apanim, which so happens to be the previous parsha in the Chumash. The Braisa says he had just returned from the Beit Din, from the court of Moshe Rabbeinu. And it seems that he wanted to pitch his tent within the camp of Dan. But because of his own lineage, he was the son of an Egyptian man and his mother happened to have been Jewish, he was not permitted to pitch his tent in the camp of Dan. He lacked the proper yichus. It was a technicality. And so the man exited the court, despondent, dejected, and he summarily blasphemed. And to add further color to the anonymous individual, Rashi notes the identity of the man's father. Ben Ish Mitzri, Hu Ha Mitzri, Sheharga Moshe. It was the very Egyptian that Moshe slew to save the life of another Jew, the Jewish slave who was being beaten up that night. And evidently at some point that man got a Jewish woman pregnant, and the son, the byproduct of that relationship, is this man, the blasphemer, the Makalel. And who is the Makalel's mother? Shlomit Bat Divri. She's referred to as Bat Divri, the daughter of Divri, because in addition to her other extracurricular activities, she was Divri, meaning She Shavchan Shel Yisrael, She Pirsim Akas Lazu Lomar Shehi Levada Haizazona. She had other, she was a prostitute perhaps, but Bas Divri, Dabronis Haisa, Medaberesim Kol Adam. She spoke with everyone. She was a chatterbox. That's why she found herself in the mess with an Egyptian man, because she couldn't keep her mouth shut. She had to speak with every single person. On top of it all, the Medrash in Vayikra Rabba claims that the Makalel was a mamzer. What does it mean that he was a mamzer? That he was a child who was an illegitimate child? So the idea is, he was not fit to marry into Israel because he was a Makalel, because he was a mamzer. That's what the Medrash Rabbah says. What may we conclude from the extensive background check, if you will, of the Makalel? Well, for starters, he's got a lot of baggage. He clearly has a past. Without a doubt, he's got a backstory that is complex. He's got a ton of skeletons in his closet. He's had a hard life. He's a sympathetic character to some degree, that's for sure. He certainly has a legitimate gripe. Life has handed him a complex set of circumstances. But why is he so upset about the Lechem Apanim? Why is he so upset about the showbread? It's out of character. It's not the sort of concern we'd expect a man with such a profile to raise. But perhaps the explanation is that he's using religion as a pretext for his own pain. Everyone has their struggles, the thing which eats up at them from the inside. But instead of facing those struggles, the Makalel casts his grief onto the Lechem Apanim. He uses it as a facade to fulfill the mask of his own deficiency. A shul, for instance, as well, can become a place in which you garner the respect you don't receive at work or at home. Just as a person can do that, a man, this man, used the sacred rituals of the temple to weigh in on something, to feel important for one moment in his life, in his miserable life, not to feel like his existence was just one giant mistake. Have you ever found yourself growing angry over a tiny, insignificant detail? I can plan an event flawlessly from start to finish, but you hit a snag, the centerpieces aren't perfect, or or the or whatever it is, some budgetary minute issue, and you can't move from the ridiculous position. We become fixated on the problem, and it becomes our cause. Like someone has a yurt site for his relative and decides that Revi was the single most important aliyah to their parent, and so anything else received would be a deep and inconsolable insult to the relative's memory. Why does he care so much about Lechem Aparim? Why does he cry foul? The answer is that he doesn't at all, but it's something else to focus on other than his own pain. It is itself soothing and comforting to focus on this particular religious minutia. Those who break out in a rash whenever they hear the latest chumrah, or the way in which Haredim conduct themselves on an airplane, or the pace of davening is one day too fast or one day too slow, they tend to be people who are insecure of their own level of observance. It's a lot easier to focus on an external issue than to have to be honest and look in the mirror and examine your own flaws. There's a halacha that a mamzer is not permitted to write a Sefer Torah. Sounds very harsh. But because when he arrives, the verse, Lo yavo mamzer b'kal Hashem, that a mamzer shall not be permitted to enter the congregation of God, he will hesitate momentarily when writing the name of God. And he won't be able to compose that name with true kavana. That's what the Shach paskins. Often our personal grievances become the launch point for our own form of protest and righteous indignation. Rabbi Danny Yalkut, a colleague from Pittsburgh, once said, nobody yells Hasagas Gvul louder than the guy who opened up the pizza shop 6 months ago. Because he's upset now, because he has a pizza shop and nobody else should open it up. But that's why Chazal give us multiple backstories, to tell us that it was never about the Lechem Aparim. It was something else in his life. And I think the message is that life is hard. Our frustration is understandable, but we mustn't use that which is kodesh, that which is holy, to hide behind. The Lechem Aparim is referred to in English as the showbread, and the irony here is that it's a mere show for some people. Instead, we have to become more secure, more comfortable with our own flaws. We have to try not to obscure from beneath the cloud of alternative concerns, and remember the Torah doesn't demand perfection, but it does expect us to be honest with ourselves. We all have past events in our lives that we're not proud of, a relative whom we don't speak of, or something we don't mention in public at risk of blushing. We can use those as a pretext for anger, frustration, apathy, or we can write them down and enshrine them in our resume of failures. And the reason such a resume works is because most everyone around us is writing the traditional resume, filled with exaggerated and invented qualities. The world is filled with makalels who sidetrack the conversation, who build walls of falsehood around their fragile and desperate core. It's a rare find indeed when someone is comfortable enough in their own skin to be forthcoming and sincere. As the verse in Eicha teaches, Ma'is onan adam chai gever al chato. Where does a living man complain? A strong man because of his sins. Mi'it onen adam chai, it says in the Medrash. Ravuna explains, stand up like a strong man. Yamod ki gibor. V'yod al chata'av. Be honest about your mistakes. V'al yit onan. Do not complain. Do not allow anything else to stand in the way. If we begin to come honest with our flaws, we'll not only be more comfortable with who we are, but we'll find the world around us will be much more open and accepting of who we are as well.